Welcome back to the Fathers of the Future podcast. We are doing this episode live from a couple thousand miles apart. I am joined by my brother, Michael Sinaki. Good to see you, my man.
It's great to see you, man. Every time I see you, I'm with you, it's just so awesome.
Yeah, we've had some good times together, man, considering our relationship just began a couple years ago. We were both in a point in our lives as fathers and as men that we wanted to do something different. We were searching, and that search led us to the same training grounds in Laguna Beach, California, and we happened to become bunkmates, roommates, but progressively move that relationship into fast forward. And we've spent a lot of time together these past 2 years. Mike, you have been an intricate part of our Crucible event here that we talk about so much in the Fathers of the Future movement. You and I actually experienced a Crucible together. And then having you come back to be a guest coach, flying in from Michigan to be a guest coach is phenomenal. We were just talking about our next Crucible. This is early in the game for a shameless self-promotion, but I'm going to drop it because it's so important that the men listening to this understand that there is so much untapped power in them that will be exposed on the mountaintop, in the MMA lab, in these different evolutions of the day. We're going to be doing a September 11th Crucible. It'll begin at midnight on September 11th here in Scottsdale, Arizona. And it'll go for about the next 20 or so hours. I understand you're committed to coming out for that.
I'm in. I'm all in.
Yeah.
There's no maybe. There's no maybe. Yeah. You know that. Pre-COVID, we proved that, right? To the bottom of the Grand Canyon and back. We didn't know if there was a world to come back to, but we went to the bottom and back.
That's right, man. You kicked off COVID with me. We took two young men, two teenage boys down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. It was snowing. In March on the top of the rim, so much so that the first hour and a half heading down, and I told you this when we did it, I was like, I've been to 10 Grand Canyons. I've done rim to rim, rim to rim to rim, down and out. I've never hiked in that much snowfall in my entire life. And we did it at midnight again, as usual. It was a pretty phenomenal experience, man.
Yeah, it was... It was special for me. As you know, Luke, I'm afraid of heights, and there were a lot of self-reflection on the way down and on the way up. You know, we talked about it a little bit. It's easier to go in the dark, right? And the dark's often scary, but man, if I would have went down in the light, I'm not sure I would have done it. So, you know, kind of like philosophically, it really resonated with me. Like, no, it's good to go in the dark because you can't see what's around you. And oftentimes you can lead better in the dark than you can in the light. So, it was great, and like you said, phenomenal, down and back, short time frame, you know, wore out when we got back, but it was a phenomenal experience. It was just great.
Yeah, and those teenage boys, shout out to them, Nate and Ben Setlock. They not only completed the Grand Canyon experience, they stepped right into a Crucible with their dad. And that's really cool because from a time component, look, everybody listening to this, everybody watching this, they've all experienced the year 2020. And I haven't met a single person who's like, yeah, this fucking year rocks. Well, I'm going to be that guy. I think about this year and everybody dealing with their own bullshit and all the chaos and all the politics and all the racism, all of it. But how we show up, how we look at life truly is our life. And I'm not going to be one of those guys to blame anything on the year like so many people are. We took action. All the flights got canceled. You literally got one of the last flights in and one of the last flights out. And we're timestamping this thing, right? Like March 16th, I believe it was. March 10th, somewhere in there.
Yep.
And you work for a big company, an automotive company, and you got the news when you were here as things slowly started to shut down.
Yeah.
You didn't know if you were going to be able to get back home.
Yeah. So we were slowly ramping down our operations globally, work for GM, and slowly rolling down our operations. I was part of those calls and obviously a bit concerned because I have triplets. We'll probably get into that, but I have 15-year-old triplets and I was due to get them back, you know, on Monday. and a little concerning because I needed to make sure I was back, right? If flights were on time, everything was aligned. But as we came out of the Grand Canyon, we kind of joked like, man, is the world still there? What are we coming back to, right? Because we really didn't know when we descended. And when we came out, you know, you made the suggestion, man, you might want to rent a car just in case. And I thought, man, as crazy as that sounds, like, you're probably right. I guess I could leave right away, go right to the airport, get the car and drive home for 3 days. So we rented a car immediately on the phone with Delta. Can we get a flight home? Red eye, you know, and ironically, it was one of those flights where it was full. But on the way home, I think there were 8 people on the plane, you know, and I caught my connector and there were 3 people on the plane. So it was very timely. I made it home, you know, thankful for the experience. It was cut short a little bit, but, you know, again, it was a real powerful experience, you know, not only the Grand Canyon for myself personally, but to watch those two boys go through what they went through, to the bottom, them support one another. And then for them to come together with their dad, you know, I would say, I mean, as a coach and as a guest out there with you and your family, it's always empowering to me to coach. I think I get as much out of coaching as they do out of the Crucible. So, you know, thank you for that, Luke. And, you know, the platform that you've created is like bar none. You know, we obviously went through a Crucible ourselves, and that was, you know, physically taxing and challenging and left a lot of bruises. But I'm thankful for those bruises today because, you know, it makes me a stronger man. And any of the bruises I get out there in the Fathers of the Future Crucible do the same thing. So, yeah, in March, it was just a great experience that was timed with COVID. And I would echo your sentiments, you know, like COVID sucks. It fucking blows. You know, I've worked from home. I'm a social person. I'm a people leader. It's hard to work remotely, but you know, quite honestly, it's been a blessing. Like I've had to reflect, right? Like, so what does this mean? You know, on a typical work day, I live quite a ways from work. You know that. And one of the things I've talked about for the 3 years that we've been together in every conversation is it's a story, right? So I drive 3 hours a day without traffic, because for those in California, Arizona, with or without traffic, it's 3 hours. And for these 3 or 4 months, like I have had zero drive. So it's like I work at home. I can wake up at 6 and be on a call at 6, you know, whereas before I'm leaving the house at 4:30, I'm up at 4. You talk about power hour and all of those things. That's always a struggle because a 12-hour day quickly descends into a 15-hour day, right? And, you know, there's always time and you got to carve out that time. But on the front end or a back end of a 15-hour day, it becomes difficult. So it's been a blessing in disguise. You know, I'm a little antsy to switch jobs, but frankly, I even look at this as like, for me, right, I'm a Christian. I think God puts you where you need to be when you need to be there. And he's done that in this job right now because, you know, working from home, my connection with my kids is 20x, right? We talk about coming out of warrior, coming out of Fathers of the Future. My connection with my kids is 20x. I mean, we spend all of our time together. And frankly, it's been a blessing for them because they see me sitting right here at the kitchen table on high level calls, talking to the board of directors, talking to lawyers, attorneys, all of the things that I get involved with, managing day-to-day, you know, catastrophes, day-to-day life and death situations as a safety leader. And it's beneficial, right? They've come to appreciate me that much more, say, wow, Dad, you know, like we now know what you do. You know, two of the boys would always say, man, I want to do what you do, Dad. And it was all prefaced by what I have, right? By the tangible things. And I'd say to them, well, what is it that I do? You know, explain to me what I do. And they had no idea. So over these last 4 months, like they've come to appreciate like, man, Dad, that's what Dad does. Now they know what I do, right? And they can hear the acumen and the discussions and the level of discussions that I have. So I'm, you know, yeah, it blows, right? 2020 blows, but there's so many things that I'm thankful for the last 4 months. And frankly, it could last, you know, another 3 or 4 months from what we're being told. So I'm just thankful and blessed to be where I'm at.
And that's what we have to do. Like we have to focus on the positives, right? What you focus on, you feel. We started compiling a list one night at dinner of all the positives of COVID. And they stacked higher than the negatives. Okay, the negatives, right? You can't travel. Okay, we can't go to school. Okay, We can't be in social. There's no NBA season. Okay, great. There's more screen time. But the positives stacked and stacked and stacked. And we looked at him. It's like the positives outweighed the negatives. So that's an assignment for everybody listening is, man, take some inventory and truthfully write down all the pluses and the positives that have happened since the longest spring break of man has ever come to be, right? And then write those negatives down and focus more of that energy. You know, when I work with clients like yourself who are executives or work for, you know, Fortune 500 companies, I've been telling them it doesn't have to go back to how it was pre-COVID. You know, I say that to my wife who, you know, she was in New York 3 weeks in a row, the 3 weeks prior to when she got shut down, when she got grounded. And that's right about the time you got grounded. And, you know, that's a long time to be without the queen, to be without mom, to be without somebody who helps. So looking at it, it's like, all right, we're not going back to how it used to be. What's the hybrid, right? What is the cross culture? What are we going to do so that we don't have to go back to how things were, to where we missed mom or dad was on the road all the time? What is that starting to look like for you? And if you can disclose anything with your business, tell us and share, listeners, what is it you do?
Yeah, so I've moved around quite a bit in my career. I would say, you know, I'm on a rotational kind of development type career track. I work for GM. Currently, I'm responsible for global workplace safety. So, you know, timely, right? With all of the COVID things, basically the group that I manage develops the standards, processes, standardized work for how we do work around the globe. So it's a global responsibility. Ironically, Wuhan is one of our largest manufacturing facilities. So I've been to Wuhan several times in previous roles and seen, you know, the entire globe. You know, I as you know, Luke, 3 years ago, flew over 500,000 miles in 1 year and, you know, dotted the globe, seen the global footprint and really started to understand the business. So in the last 2 years, I've led a group of safety professionals and we're responsible for, you know, all the design standards, safety standards for the equipment. We buy about $15 billion of equipment every year. So we are responsible to make sure the equipment's safe. We install it safely. It's ready for operators to use safely. And all the risk mitigations are in place. So, you know, how will the workplace look? Ironically, you know, as corporate America has positioned itself to have the Google office, right? We hear Google office, open office concept, working in pods, collaboration. You know, we were on a journey, right? Like we were on that journey to get people closer to collaborate. So, you know, we're constantly looking at that right now. You know, we're trying to figure out how we come back to work. There are pockets of people that are back to work now. That would include, you know, mass entries of lots of people in the morning, our manufacturing footprints fully back to work. You know, typically in an assembly plant, there's 2,000 to 3,000 people that are entering a plant at 6 o'clock to start their shift, right? So onboarding or onboarding 3,000 people in 15 minutes because they don't want to get there that early. Trying to get them all to their jobs very quickly is a huge challenge. We have a medical staff, obviously, that's helped collaborate with that, and it's been very successful. And, you know, we've had very, very limited spread. So it's been successful. The risk mitigations that our team has put in place has been good. Obviously, everybody's concerned, you know, not necessarily about communicable disease at work, but as we go home, right? Who are we exposed to? That 3,000 multiplies into 15 and 20 and 25,000 people you need to really be worried about in terms of contact tracing and all of those things. So, you know, it's a day-to-day thing. We have a 4:30 a.m. call every morning to talk about what's happening on the other side of the globe. They're 12 hours in front of us, you know, and then this side of the world wakes up at 6:30 and 7 when we start the day here. So it's, you know, I can't say that we're on the backside of it. You know, a good chunk of the business will be quarantined for some time. And you know, my personal opinion, not the company's opinion, but I think we're going to earn our way back with, some type of, vaccine. you know, I think that'll earn our way back into some type of normalcy. But in the meantime, you know, we look at risk mitigation, oftentimes called spit guards, booger guards, you know, everybody makes light of that, but we see them all over the place, right? In retail, it's going to be the same thing. You know, that open office environment that we were striving for, it's going to be pared back a little bit. People will be spaced socially, you know, and then it'll be the hybrid that you kind of talk about that they're looking at schools, right? Maybe 2 days a week in the office dedicated to collaboration with the appropriate teams and then 3 days away. But, you know, it's truly a work in progress. And, you know, I don't think it's like the new norm. I think it's just where the world needs to go, you know, because I think a lot of corporations have been wed to this bed watching, right? Or you need to be there 9 to 5. And in reality is like, you really don't need to be, right? With the tools that we have, like you said, we're 2,000 miles away and here we are collaborating. I feel like I'm sitting in the room with you. I can do that with my team globally. And this, I think, just moves things forward, right? I mean, you hear corporations talk about it. The retail industry said, hey, there was 10 years left of traditional retail. This just shrunk that 10 years down to move e-commerce within 2 to 3 years, right, as the mainstream. So there are casualties that come with all of it. And, you know, there's winners that come with all of it. And we just got to, you know, got to make sure we're on the winning team at this point.
And speaking of how you got here, got into these shoes, you know, sitting in that seat from a business standpoint in a professional world, in the precast, we talked a little bit about it. You have a few master's degrees.
I do. Yeah. Two master's degrees.
A couple. Yeah. You have a couple. I got a couple cars. I have a couple tats. I have a couple things, but master's degrees is not one of them. But yeah, you had a school teacher tell you that you shouldn't go to school. Now, let's go back a little further as I want you to tell this story. But you are, like my father's side of the family, multi-generational in the American automotive industry coming out of Detroit City.
Yes.
You're third generation.
Third generation, yeah.
Tell us,
yeah, so
tell
my
us
dad,
about that.
Yeah, and you have to keep me on track because it's a deep story. So, you know, grandfather worked at General Motors in a castings plant. My dad, hourly, you know, he's a labor union represented employee. My dad got an associate's degree, worked at GM, you know, as a union member as well. Both had roughly 31 years. You know, felt a personal obligation and probably got shooted a little bit into the auto industry just by virtue of that, working on 100-year legacy, I guess, you know, and I oftentimes have to remind myself that's not mine to carry, because I did quit GM at one point. But you know, the reality is, yeah, I'm working on 100-year legacy. My boys want to do it as well, and I'm not steering them that way, but, to your point, you know, going through school was an average, you know, average student, I would say, didn't really apply myself, graduated from a small farm community school, which you've been to, Luke, class size 95. And my school counselor, you know, got to be my junior year and they start to talk about placement and where you want to go to college and what you want to do. And you know, at that time I wanted to be a doctor. Clearly I hadn't applied myself, you know, nearly enough to be a doctor. I want to be a teacher. I didn't know what the fuck I wanted to do, right? But I went and saw my counselor, my guidance counselor. And I said, hey, I want to go to Central Michigan University, which is, you know, a public university here in Michigan. And he looked at me and he said, you know, Sanaki, I don't know how to tell you this, but you're just not college material. Now, this is a school counselor, right, that's supposed to motivate and propel you into your career, right? So it's as a young man, that's pretty self-deprecating. Like, how does this work? Like, this guy is telling me you're not college material, right? You're not meant to go and work anywhere outside of maybe you should be a plumber. Maybe you should be an electrician. You know what? Maybe your best bet is military. You know, but I don't think you should go to college because you're not college material. And, you know, I think in several areas of my life, that has propelled me in the sense that it's like, fuck off. Who are you to tell me what I should or shouldn't do? And, you know, we talked about that a little bit about being shoulded, you know, for a very long time. And I think that's one of the initial ones, you know, or the start of a pattern that continued throughout my life. But, you know, I met him probably about 5 years after that. At that point, I had gotten my bachelor's degree, and I went to a private university and got my bachelor's degree. And I was working at GM at the time, and I seen him at a football game, and he says, "Oh, Sanaki, how are you?" And I said, "I'm great." He says, "Well, what are you doing now?" I said, "Well, I'm working at GM." He goes, "Oh, are you on the assembly line or what are you doing?" You know? And I said, "No, actually I'm a supervisor." He said, "Oh, you're in the salary ranks. Like, did you go to school?" And I said, "Yeah, I just finished my bachelor's degree at Northwood." And he says, you know, the look on his face was like, "Wow, I missed that." Right. Like, you could tell he rewound to, I told this kid he wasn't going to be shit. Right. And like, he did something. And I seen him 2 years later. I had just finished my first master's degree. And he says, "Now what are you doing?" You know, and it was like a timestamp, right? And he's like, "So you got a master's degree from Kettering University, which is a technical university." And I said, "Yeah, in fact, I'm working on my second one. You know, I liked it. I like college so much. I'm working on my second one, and that'll be done, you know, in the next 9 months." And, you know, it was very satisfying, right, to basically just say, like, "Hey, I'm the master of my fate, right? Captain of my soul," what we always talk about. And, you know, I just had to double down on myself. And, you know, when somebody lacks confidence in you, it's difficult to do that, but there's something that's done that, you know, and I've done it in several other occasions, Luke. As you know, I did Ironman a couple times, Lake Placid, you know, and along the way, didn't know how to swim, didn't know how to do any of that, weighed 300 and almost 20 pounds. And, you know, was told, like, "You can't do an Ironman. That's not you, right? You can't, you'll never do that, right? That's so far out of your reach." And, you know, I mean, I lost a bunch of weight and went on to do it. And, you know, now in hindsight, it's like, what's the next race, right? We talk about that. You don't necessarily have to have the next race, but when you're competitive like that, you know, I've had some health issues, genetic health issues that the medical society says, "Yeah, you know, you have this, you're on blood thinners, so you shouldn't do it. You know, you shouldn't do Ironman." And now I'm contemplating doing another one because it's like, fuck it. You know, is this the counselor telling me not to do it? When we did the Grand Canyon, same thing, brother. If I could capture how many people said, "You should not be going on a plane right now. Are you not watching the news?" And it was like, wow, nobody else gets a vote except for me. I'm going fucking Arizona to do Grand Canyon with my brother, right?
And I'm laughing at it because I had somebody in my corner, not my wife, not in my immediate household, but send me a text message that said, "You can't go down into the Grand Canyon. You don't understand. Your family is going to be raped and pillaged and killed if you don't get back soon." And I looked at it. I was like, my God, man. How many of these motherfuckers are in the world, in the universe, in our ear every single day? My high school counselor, and I give her a little bit of props, but she told my wife, high school sweetheart, "That guy's going to be a loser." And maybe at that time, she might have been halfway right at that time in that moment. But she still was enough of that haterade to create a mental observation in my wife. The same way with you, right? The teacher saying, "The counselor, there's no way you should do that." And you come back with two master's degrees. The chip on the shoulder. And that's not why we do it, but it does give you that extra bit of fuel to keep showing up. Yeah. What's going on now in your life? Where are you getting this fuel of the "you shouldn't do it"? What's happening right now in your world? Let's talk present day.
Yeah. So, you know, it's ironic. So I've been married twice, you know, and not to really get into that, but I find myself at 45. You know, we talk about like first birthday, you know, one of the things that we talk, the poem, The Dash, right? I mean, you know that I love to read that on our crucibles together. And that resonates with me like no other. And, you know, my dash includes two birthdays, right? I was born August 21st, 1974. My second birthday or my rebirth was with you. It was in Laguna, right? It was August 21st, 2018. That is included in my dash, right? So I would say, you know, present day, right? I mean, Warrior was definitely a spark plug to get me started. I was married and remarried and divorced very quickly. Good relationship, right? Lots of lessons, lots of love, but it just wasn't compatible. And now I find myself single, you know, a single dad of triplets, and very connected with my kids. But frankly, the shoulds and where I'm at today, like I married my high school sweetheart, right? So dated since I was 15, married until I was 41, remarried very quickly in a very serious relationship. And as we talked in the precast, you know, for me, I've always had an opinion, right? Or a vote in every decision that I make. And now, you know, I find myself with a lot of self-talk like, man, Mike, is that okay? I don't know, Mike, is that okay, right? I'm in the middle of, there's nobody to look left or right to ask. It's a little bit scary. I mean, we talked about that because, you know, this is the first time I've been alone to make decisions for myself. So that chip, you know, I have that chip in many senses, you know, like I always want to do the right thing morally and ethically. I think you can affirm to that, Luke. But for me, it's a little bit of a scary time, a time of uncertainty, right? We all want that certainty. COVID has brought uncertainty, but has also brought certainty, as well as this space of newly single. Like how do you navigate this, right? In many senses, it's like I'm a 15-year-old boy in a 45-year-old body. I have the earning potential there. I have the intellect there. I have great kids. I have all of the things that I need, right? Shelter, food, everything's there. But it's like, whoa, this is a new space, right? Like I've had my mom and dad, 1 through 15, 15 to 18, and then a pseudo spouse from 15 to 41. And so there's a bit of uncertainty there, but you know, the beauty is the work that you and I have done together. You know, I do the 5-minute gratitude journal every day. Like that's my saving grace, the one that gifted me when I was there in March. Yep, exactly. That is extremely helpful because, you know, I think the intentions, right? Who am I? Who are you? Helps me every day, right? I know that I'm a good father. I'm a good man. I'm a people leader. I'm strong. You know, I'm a protector. All of those things come out every day. And that helps me make those decisions, right? Like what is right for me? And that's been a great thing, you know, and I look at all aspects, you know, I'm looking at my career now, like, wow, I've driven 3 hours a day for 15 years, you know, and that's a lot of time. I wouldn't trade it. You know, it's definitely provided all of the things that I and my family needed, but now I'm looking at it like, wow, how do I reinvent that workspace for myself? It could be a hybrid, could be a lot of things, but yeah, it's a place of uncertainty right now, but I'm still, you know, navigating through that.
And I have a great quote, the bridge between scarcity and abundance is gratitude. And that's the reality. When we start to feel fear or worry or scarcity, or I'm not enough, or I don't have enough, the only way to literally fill that is gratitude. And when you pack that gratitude in, gratitude for exactly where you're at right now, gratitude for you know, two marriages, gratitude for three kids, gratitude for your time, gratitude, here's one, gratitude for that teacher, that person in your life that said you couldn't do that, gratitude for that person. Right? Gratitude for not growing up with a dad. Gratitude for losing my mom at a young age. All that shit gives you this fuel, this fire, and this power to then say, all right, I'm the one in charge. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Let's roll. Let's see where we go from here. So that's amazing to hear that because I know your story. But the people listening, talk to us for a moment now about having triplets and how, you know, That's been its own journey, its own ride, its own volume and chapters of your life.
Yeah. So this is a tearjerker. I mean, you know the story. You know, I would say married my high school sweetheart. You know, we always thought we would have kids. You should have kids, right? You should do all of these things. The conventional constraints that we all put on ourselves. Focused on our careers, focused on education. At about the age of 26, we started the fertility path because we weren't getting pregnant. And we had four different attempts at fertility. Obviously, very expensive. In Michigan, it's all out of pocket. And, you know, not to get into it, but three unsuccessful. We had embryos. We had started the home adoption process. We were going to adopt. And other people in our community had just gotten pregnant for triplets with a different doc. We said, hey, let's try it one more time. We've got embryos. We want to try it one more time. So we tried it. I was living in Toronto at the time came home. You know, pregnancy didn't involve me at that point. It was, you know, all science. Science was on our side, and we got pregnant for triplets. Obviously, a little guarded because of the emotion that went into getting pregnant, all of the physical hormones, all of those things. And so at about month three, we told people. Obviously very excited, but with multiples, it's very high risk pregnancy. I stayed living in Toronto for work. My wife at the time was at home, and she continued to work as well. In December of 2004, right after Christmas, she went into early delivery, preeclampsia, pretty emergent situation. I was home at that point. So she was in the hospital on bed rest. Ultimately, what they thought was from 25 weeks to 40 weeks, right? Pregnancies are viable or highly successful if the child lasts until 32 weeks in womb. The triplets were born at 27 and a half weeks. So expectancy of life is very, it's dire. The triplets were born at 2 pounds, 11 ounces, 12 ounces, and 13 ounces, very small. In isolettes, you know, all born less than a minute apart, rushed right in, put on ventilators, remained on ventilators for almost 3 months until they were 40 weeks, you know. So it was basically the isolette was the womb and remained on ventilators probably about 75% of that time. All had brain bleeds, basically strokes in babies. All had surgeries, you know, one son had eye surgery. One son had heart surgery at 14 days old. So they were born January 27th, 05. At 3 pounds, you know, they went into the side of his chest and fixed his heart on Valentine's Day. And we still joke, right? On Valentine's Day, they fixed your heart. The surgeon was like 6'6", and his hands were like bare hands, right? And he reached into my son's heart, fixed his heart. And my daughter had, you know, stomach surgery. They all came home. They all had RSV, collapsed lungs, back in the hospital, back in the peds ICU several times. And, you know, I've told you this before, Luke, the first 3 years was not a traditional childhood, you know, full of physical therapy, full of surgeries, eye tests. Are they going to see? Are they going to be blind, deaf, missing milestones, all three, you know, all of those things. My ex-wife at the time, you know, one of the things I came home from Warrior was, you know, it was an apology video because we never mourned the three beings that we lost, right? That we were just hard charge. Let's get pregnant. Let's get pregnant. This is what we're supposed to do. This is what we should do. And we never took the time to mourn. So one of the takeaways from Warrior was I came back and apologized. We had been divorced for almost 2 years and I felt compelled. I didn't need to carry it anymore, right? I had guilt. And dropped it there. But the journey with the kids has been great. You know, post 5 years, I was able to quit GM and I went and did a venture capital startup. I got to stay at home for 2.5 years and do the PTO and all of those things, you know, field trips. And that was great. So
take a minute, take a minute to share that startup with us, at least from the person you worked with. He's a very interesting character, and I don't know how much of it you can talk about, but you shared a couple stories with me on that that hike down the summit to hear, you know, what that experience was like. Because again, you've worked for GM for how many years combined?
24 years combined. Yeah, at that time, it was roughly about 13 years. We were at a point in the company where we were entering bankruptcy. I was considering a career change. A very close friend of mine, actually, it was through an introduction. Our daughter's name is Nava. We want a nursery makeover. This was Nava's lifelong partner. His name was Albert. He was Dutch. He had came to the U.S. to do a startup. It was a mobile app that allowed you to pay for your parking with your cell phone. Kind of evolutionary in 2008. Today, it's like, why wouldn't we have had that, you know, a long time before that? So I was employee 3 out of what became 72 when I left. Headquartered in Atlanta. I got to live with Albert. Very close with he and Nava, obviously, you know, and their families. And learned a tremendous amount. We got to work with one of the biggest venture capital funds. We were given a large sum of money to get this thing off the ground. Got it off the ground. And after 3 years, it was time to do an IPO or spin it off to a bigger company, which we did. And at that point, I went back to GM. But to your point, Luke, I got to be very close with Albert. He was very successful, lived in Amsterdam, had places, he and Nava had places around the world. And I got to do all of those things with him, basically start up a company, hire, you know, 75 people, scale the organization across the U.S. and turned it into a very large acquisition and very profitable acquisition for our venture capital investors, you know, from the infancy of the company. Went back, remained very close friends with Albert. Our kids were his grandkids, essentially. I was like a son to him. Fast forward, you know, 3 years ago, right around the time of Warrior, he got married to Nava. They had been lifelong partners. They got married. Unfortunately, he was diagnosed with brain cancer that year. So we lost Albert almost 2 years ago in May. And a year after he was married, I flew back to Amsterdam to bury my, you know, kind of second dad, you know, best friend. And pretty surreal. You know, he was a relatively young guy. We were very close. We lived together when I spent the week or two in Atlanta every month for those 3 years. And yeah, I mean, it's a weird spot right now in life. You know, I was always the kid. I had mentors. I had people coaching me. And now I find myself in a spot where it's like, whoa, you know, now I have to like resort to my mentors are retiring. Albert passed away. And now like I have to reinvent myself as a mentor and people leader, you know, and kind of reposition myself. So, you know, I reflect Albert's like right here, you know, he lives in my heart. Just recently he and Nava gifted my kids, their college funds. So in gratitude for the work that, we did together in the, parking industry, you know, in what he got in equity stake when he cashed out, upon his death, he wanted to leave a legacy for my kids. And so he gifted a large sum of money. So my kids will always be remembering and be grateful for Albert in their lives. So
okay, yeah. Okay. So Sawyer comes to you in 2 years. He's a senior in high school, about to be 18. He says, "Dad, I'm not going to college. I'd like to use that money for a startup. I have this idea and this concept." What do you do?
Oh man. Well, I'm not sure the legalities of it, so I can't speak to that. It's in a state college fund. But if I did have access to it, you know, the private university I went to was an entrepreneurial capitalism based university. They can talk any curriculum they want because they don't take state funding. And I would probably say, I mean, I have an entrepreneurial spirit. You know, I'm a W-2 person, right? But I have had outside interest, you know, different businesses, real estate, things like that, that continues to grow on the outside. But, you know, if my son wanted to do something entrepreneurial, I would support him, you know, because I'm a firm believer, like your trajectory today isn't necessarily the trajectory that where you're going to land, right? And I wouldn't want to should him at all. I would maybe look at his business plan and give him some perspective on, I think this is where you'll land. But in the end, that money was given to them. And I think, and we've talked about it a lot, Luke, I mean, you're probably smarter than I am. I just have the paper. You know, I have the degrees, right? So I truly believe that. And I believe it at work too. You know, like I have 2 master's degrees, but there's so many other outlets to learn. You know, you learn from the bruises in your life. And, you know, you learn from your experiences. And, you know, what you do with Naj and Camille and Cannon, like, traveling the world, right? That was part of the plan. That kind of got unwound, but I watched your travel through the Midwest. Like, those are memories that will serve them not only as memories, but they'll always remember Iowa, St. Louis, Missouri, Lake of the Ozarks, all of those things, in the sense that the world is so big, right? So if Sawyer came to me and said that, I would say, look, buddy, if that's really where you want to go, that's great. Here's kind of the, this is what happens, right? All the money's gone and you lose, then you restart. You come back to your home base and you restart, right? If you're very successful, don't forget your dad, you know, just don't forget your dad.
Yeah. Hey, shout out to dad. You, some of that insider training back in early March, made a couple $100 on Carnival Cruise Lines on the flip dip. So I appreciate that, man, for sure.
Yeah,
no doubt. And don't give us a shout out too soon. We're headed to California for just about 3 weeks, so we'll compare and contrast this Midwest trip to this California trip. And instead of places like the Ozarks and Iowa, it's Los Angeles and Sacramento. So we'll see how the environment shifts our attitude, our mood, and ultimately our takeaways from this trip. Talk to us for a minute about. I don't want to use the term haters because that kind of ages us, but you know, the you shouldn't do it. I've never met a man in my life who's had as many as you. And yes, I did get a chance and an opportunity to be at your wedding and speak to a room full of people who were shouldning me at the table afterwards. So what's it been like? Are you just, you know, for anybody listening right now who might have people in their life that say, hey, you shouldn't do this, the opinionators, the people who don't take action, the ones who are literally sitting at their home that they've been in for 20 some years telling you that you shouldn't go on a trip around the country, you shouldn't drive to California, you shouldn't invest in Carnival Cruise Lines because it's a failing business and there's no money in it. Like, you've got an overwhelming sense, or at least I feel that oftentimes, that there's a ton of people throwing darts at you.
Yeah. I think for my entire life, I've given a fuck what other people think, you know, in essence, the shoulds or shouldn'ts have had a lot of weight, you know, or had a lot of direction for me. You know, you talk about the wedding, Luke. I would say even before that, right? Rewind to Warrior. My first wife was like, you don't need that shit. Like, you don't need that. And in hindsight, like, if I had done Warrior, I would have came back a different man. I'm not sure it would have saved my marriage, but it definitely would have made me a different man, right? And, you know, I have very close friends, right? A couple mentors that are still very close friends. And when I told them what Warrior costs, they're like, so you're going to pay what to go to California and come back with scars all over your body? Like, if you pay us that, yeah, exactly. If you pay us that, we will kick you in the dick at least a dozen times and it will all be good, right? And so I think, you know, there, you can talk about the gap, right? You and I know about the gap. As the gap gets bigger, the laggard gets scared, right? They want to pull you back. For me, I live in a small community, and I think as you experience success, the shoulds and shouldn'ts come out as pulling you back, right? No, that's not you. You don't need to wear a suit jacket. You don't need to excel at GM. You don't. And it's like, I'm at a point in my life now where I just don't give a fuck. Like, who is anybody to tell me what I should do, who I should be, who, what I shouldn't do? You know, the wedding was a prime example. You know, like, I had friends that I had been friends with for since I was 5 years old, bled with in football, owned businesses with lawn and landscape, done all of those things in life, but I was still compelled to have you talk because of our connection. Because I'm a firm believer, connection isn't based on how many years you know someone. It's that level of connection that you and I had very quickly, not only through Warrior, but then after, right? Our conversations, the value, the richness of the conversations. I mean, you talk about it often at the Crucible. If I died tomorrow, who would be the five people I want in the front row? You'd be one of them. So why in the fuck would I not have you talk at my funeral? And who is anybody else to tell me who should talk at my wedding, who shouldn't talk at my wedding? So I've evolved in that sense. Obviously, it's a work in progress. You know, if you're wired where you've always, for 45 years, really given a fuck what other people say. That's a hard thing to shift, right? It's a hard thing to drop. But with consciousness around it and intention, it is possible, you know, and I've had to do that. I've had to do it. You know, when I quit GM, it was like, what? You're going to lose 100 years of legacy? What? Nobody quits General Motors. What? They paid for 2 master's degrees. You don't have any college debt. And it's like, yeah, this is what I'm going to go do.
So, I'm out.
You know, yeah. It's like, that's not, I'm not here anymore, you know. And without that courage, Albert would have never happened. That path would have never happened. The learnings that I got, all of those things, like that path wouldn't have happened. And ironically, I came back to GM, have had very large success because I left. I had the courage to leave. I had a high level of, you know, experience with the people that I worked with. And it made me a better man. And in hindsight, it's kicked off the trajectory that I have now because I had the ability to have zero fucks. Yeah, I'm quitting GM, you know, and there's uncertainty there. I'm going to go into the dark and the unknowing, and I'll figure it out. So
what's interesting about what you said just a moment ago is, you know, you're newly on your own, right?
Yeah.
So if I put myself into the perspective of I clearly have a wife. I've been married to for 14 years and she supports me and she loves me and vice versa. I still won't approach her with my next best great idea because I've been in the car before and been like, hey, I'm signing up for this. I'm going back to this. I'm paying this for this. And in an instant, my idea, my vision, my dream, it just gets smushed. Now, she supports me 100%. But what I've realized through the process of having a relationship and being married is oftentimes you've got to trust your own intuition, your own gut. You've got to stand behind what you believe is best for you and for your family. And if you listen to the opinions of others, it doesn't mean you can't get feedback when the time comes. But if you just listen to the pure opinions of others, most of the time, your idea, your concept, your business, your mission, all of it is going to get demolished. And if you listen to it enough, unfortunately, you tend to believe it. I've told this story a couple times on here. You know, when I left a extremely successful gym, a box, you know, making $150,000 a year, making it rain coconut water, you know, waking up 15 minutes before my first client. When I was in that and I started to tell people, I'm going to do something else. I'm kind of going down this path. I'm getting into life coaching. I want to go and be able to, like, people were like, what are you going to, you're the fitness guy. You're the CrossFit guy. You taught me about CrossFit and intensity. What do you mean you're going to go do something? Why would you go do that? Don't be stupid, right? Going on a world tour with your family. Yeah, don't be stupid. Why would you do that? It's like every crazy idea that to us seems like it's a possibility. It's something that we have to go and do. We've got to get uncomfortable. We've got to face this challenge. We got to climb this fucking mountain. What for? For me. That's why. So that when I'm done with it, when I come back, then you're going to get a part of me you've never had before. Then you're going to get a piece of me. I have to go and do this. And oftentimes, you know, most people stop in their tracks when somebody tells them, no, it's not a good idea. You've been able to fight through that and consistently fight through that. The question now becomes, now that you don't have somebody holding you down or holding you back, who is it that gets in your way most? And is it you? Could you possibly ever see yourself getting in your own way in the future of what's next for Michael Sanaki?
Yeah, I mean, you know as well as I do, because we have lots of conversation about this, whether it's really, you know, future relationships, whether it's, you know, investments that I want to go make on the real estate side. I'm the biggest cog in the wheel for myself. At this point, there's nobody else, right? I mean, my kids support me. They see the value in everything that I've done. You know, and for me, it's really me. Like that's the self-talk, right? The kind of manic self-talk that I have with myself. And, you know, it's also been very enlightening to be by myself and try to project into what does a relationship look like in the future, right? What does that person need to look, breathe, and smell like? And, you know, as you know, I've met a girl, you know, and who knows where that'll be. I care a lot about her, and, you know, she seems to be that person, right? There's not a lot of their support, right? There's not, like you talk about with Naj, there's support. There's a few questions. Of course, this is very infant in its infant phase, you know, of any relationship. But I shitted myself on relationships. Like, fuck, I got a divorce, right? And then I got another divorce. Like, I shitted myself to the point where I was telling myself, well, maybe I just need to be a monk until the kids are done with school, right? Like, you got 3 years. Just go into celibacy and monk for the next 3 years. But that doesn't serve me. You know, the two divorces are, you know, at first it was embarrassing, but then I went to the gratitude. You know, we talk about gratitude, like I'm thankful for both of those marriages because I learned so much. I love both of those women so much, but for whatever reason, right, they weren't compatible. And now I am a better man, right? But what does that look like? That is what defines itself. And, you know, for me, it seems a little arrogant. You know, we talked about it before, like who in the fuck am I to make a decision as to what my spouse needs to be or what they need to look like or do or make or where they fit, right, with my kids. But it's like, wait a second, that is up to me. Like I'm alone now. And as it's like, yeah, I do get to decide. I've never really gotten to decide before, right? So when I sit in that space, it's like, it's scary, but it's also like really a great, powerful space to be in. Like I get to choose what the next 45 years looks like. I mean, I'm 45, right? I'm thinking I'm going till 90 or 100. Like I get to choose today what tomorrow looks like. I get to pick what I want to do, where I want to live, you know, all of those things. And it's really empowering. And, you know, what you said about gratitude earlier is really true. Like I've had to continue to go back to that. So I am here's biggest obstacle.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And that's good because you can overcome it as well. Here's something very interesting that I find in you being able to have some time alone, right? Solitude, as we call it. The brain critically reacts and responds differently when you have to do something for yourself versus do it for somebody else. There's a certain survival technique that I believe the body processes through. And this is why I'm such a big fan of going and doing experiences alone, right? Going into the dark with, you know, somebody else. But if all you do, and this is for a lot of the guys that are listening to this podcast, if all you do is everything with your family and you don't have your own life inside of your family's life, if your wife does not have her own purpose inside of your family's life, if your children do not have their own identity inside of the family, the core four, right? The fantastic four, whatever your family looks like, people will tend to get lost. And not only lost, they don't feel like they have their own thing. So they start to use other things to fill that. I'm seeing it a lot right now with a lot of the men that I coach, right? Avatar, you and me, you know, 35 to 50 years old, where son or daughter or child is now going off to college. It's another phase. It's another stage. And mom is at home with a bottle in her hand before noon, because she has no identity. She's not part of the business. She's not part of her son going to college. She's not part of, you know, I'm seeing this reoccurring as a theme. So with these younger guys that I'm starting to coach, you know, I got a guy right now who's 3 years into the marriage and 3 years into their kids, shotgun everything. I'm like, it's great that you're going to go do these things, right? You do the Crucible, you do Seal Fit, you do these events, but you're going to have to find a way to inspire your wife to do some things on her own. I talk about it all the time in my life. My wife will literally pass each other 8 hours in the day and then boom, 2 minutes of connection, because she's got her own life through her business. She's got her own, you know, things that she loves to do, and getting dirty and muddy and rolling around in a pit is not it, right? She wants to go and travel with her friends. So you got to have these unique individual lives within the core of the family. And the sooner you understand that, I didn't understand this in the beginning. I was like, vacation with your friends? What the fuck? It's like spring break all over again. There's no fucking way I'm going to sign up for that. Now it's like, yes, yes, you should go for a week with your friends wherever you want to go. Because I want to go roll around in the dirt and the mud for a week. So you go do that. Let me go do this. Let us go have our own individual lives, but come back. Come back to the foundation. Come back to the intention of what this family's about. And the kids got to be able to do it too. So I'm jealous in some ways of you being able to have this unique freedom, which again, you've never had in your life. Like you said, when I first met you, one of the best stories ever is, you know, they put me in the room with you and you're like, yeah, I've only kissed three women in my whole life. I'm 43. Yeah. And one was my mom and one was my grandma. What? Wait, you're telling me you've kissed three women in your life, your mom, your grandma, and your ex-wife, and you're 43? Wait, I must be getting punked. Wait a second. This is my roommate. What? That's how I first met you. And then understanding you, like you said earlier, you know, your guiding post, your true north, who you are in the depths of your soul, it's real. And yeah, you've dated a little bit since then and you got married again, but the uniqueness of your individualism right now is such an intricate part of your growth and where you go from here. And I think it's really cool and unique to be able to see it and then to be able to experience it. You know, you don't have your kids all the time. There's a lot of guys I talk to that are in the same boat where, you know, they're sharing time with their kids. And when they're alone, they're completely lost, right? They're at the bar, they're drinking, you know, they're partying, and then they come back to normal. They're like, oh God, thank God my kids are back. You're doing it differently. Why? Why are you starting to notice that the behaviors or the patterns of being single are not what you want to achieve? It's not what your end goal is.
Yeah, I think a couple points there. You know, I know I'm not meant to be single. I've honed in on my soul purpose. My soul purpose is to be a powerful dad. You know, I am meant to lead and, influence my kids, my young adults and, you know, grandkids, create a legacy for them, you know, and there's several things in the works now where that's on its way, you know, and I do. I want to be with somebody else, but in the end, it's going to be the right person, right? That complements me. And to your point, it's an interesting phase. I mean, I had skipped a lot of those guy trips because, you know, the social or self-inflicted social norms are like, don't do that. Why would you go do that, right? You're already time constrained because of work and the drive and the kids. And it just builds, right? I mean, date night wasn't even a thing in my first marriage. It was like, hey, let's go out for dinner, just the two of us. Well, it's easier. We'll just take the kids to Buffalo Wild Wings, right? And it'll just be all of us. We might as well be together if we're going to go out. And without those intentional steps, right, that we've come to realize, it just drowns out, right? You lose your connection. And that goes for, you know, many, many areas. Like if you don't invest in yourself, like when I came in March, I was almost divorced or already divorced very short time before that. And as I'm flying out, I'm like, wow, I'm flying out here, right? There's a pandemic going on and I don't need to text anybody to let them know I'm on the plane and that they just shut the door and that I just landed. It's like, no, fuck no. Like I just landed and I'm going to call Luke and tell him, hey, pull up to the door. I'm here. I'm not accountable to anybody, right? And it feels very good. But at the same time, I know that I want to be with somebody. And so that's interesting, but it's also a very empowering spot to be able to define that. But I know a lot more about myself. And what you hit on is like, I have to carve out time for myself. If it's vacations, if it's dating myself, you know, we talk about dating ourselves. We, you know, one of the things I do, I go get a nice haircut and a hot shave every month. you know, and that's my time, right? I've gotten into where I float once a month. That's like dating myself, right? It's intentional and I just go do it. And most of my small town friends would be like, man, that's gay. What are you doing? Like, you're going for a hot shave. Like, you're paying $100 for a hot shave. Like, just get a Bic, you know, take care of it yourself. What's this float shit? You know, it's like, no, that's what I want. I get it. You don't buy into it. That's what I want, right? So it's a very empowering spot. You know, as I explore with this woman that I met, you know, I'm excited about the potential, right? I mean, I know that I need light fun. I want to grow and evolve, but at the same time, I don't need a coach or a counselor as a spouse, right? I want to cheer my spouse to the top. And, you know, so it's a great time in my life, it, you know, even with the uncertainty and the scared, you know, idea of, wow, I don't know what's next. I mean, you know, I'm a planner, so I always think like 3, 5, 10, 15 year plans. And I'd love to know what week one of that 15 year plan looks like and week 52 and 78 and on, but I'm starting to like be able to slow down and appreciate the wins, right? Have gratitude for the wins. Wow. I just bought another house. It's going to generate some more passive income. We're going to do this. I met a great woman. I'm grateful for that. Do I know where it's going to be a month from now, 6 months from now, 3 years from now? I don't know. But what I do know is that I can control today and I can control tomorrow and the week beyond, you know, through intention and gratitude and just living that way every day, you know, I think helps me, you know, just continue to live in that uncertainty phase, the scarcity phase in many ways, but also just celebrate the wins and the abundance because I have a lot to be thankful for.
And maybe that's why we're so compatible because, you know, you're focused on the 1, 3, 5, 10, 15 year markers. And I'm like, what's that smell? Is that shit? Damn it. There's shit on the wall. Oh, that doesn't work. Let's start over again tomorrow. Right. So maybe that's why you and I connect so well. Opposites do attract. And sometimes you got to have somebody with the determination, the focus, the structure, and then be able to unplug and disconnect with that person who takes things pretty lightly and really focuses on that next move, that next step, whatever that may be. I have a question for you as we ask every guest that's been on the show, and maybe you've had a chance to practice it, maybe not, but today's your last day. Today's you take your last breaths and you got those three triplets, you got some family, you've got a very proud, important, connected part of your community, your neighborhood, the high school counselor, every single person that's ever known Michael Sinaki. What would you want them to know about you in your dash?
That's a great question. No, I have not practiced it. But we've written similar letters in the same area. You know, the first people, I'd be remiss to not say, you know, it would all be founded in gratitude. You know, I would thank my mom and dad, you know, whether said or unsaid, I know that they're proud of me and I know that they love me. You know, that wasn't necessarily a sentiment that was always shared. And I've always strived to make them proud, but I know in my heart that they're proud of me. And I would thank them for, you know, everything they did and reared me and, you know, the stable house that we had. And, you know, they battled through divorce and alcoholism and all of those things too. And they stayed together and they're a good example of, you know, true love. And yeah, it'd be great. I just found it in gratitude for my mom and dad. You know, to my kids, you know, they would be next. I would really, you know, try to instill in them how proud I am of them, you know, how resilient they have been before they even knew what resilience was or what the words were. The fact that, you know, they've all battled through physical and, you know, emotional through the divorce. You know, my kids are the most resilient creatures I think I know. You know, they've come out of it very strong. They're gracious kids. They're smart kids. They're talented kids. And I would just want them to know that I'm extremely proud of them. And, you know, I have a picture in one of the boys' room. It's like, I can't promise I'll be here forever, but I can promise I'll love you the rest of your life. You know, and that to me really resonates for each of my kids. You know, I can't promise you I'll be here forever. I can mentor you while I'm here. I can hug you and kiss you and do all those things, but I will love you for the rest of your life. To my ex-spouses, you know, I would convey gratitude to both of my ex-spouses. You know, there's no hate there. I'm thankful for the gifts that they gave me in many different facets. And, you know, I would thank them. And to all the doubters, I would, again, just gratitude, right? Thank you for doubting me. Thank you for giving me the motivation or the chip on my shoulder that has fucking motivated me to be the man that I am. You know, like, thank you for doubting, warrior. Like, I fucking doubled down and went and did warrior. Every time I come to Arizona, it's like, you're paying to go to Arizona? Like, do you get paid for that? Is there anything there? I'm like, no, there's not. And I fucking love it. So thank you to all the doubters, right? Like, because I just continue to get stronger as a result of that negativism or the shouldn'ts or should haves. Like, thank you to them. And then, you know, the people that I've met, right? My mentors, I would make sure that they know I'm grateful for everything that they've done for me from a career standpoint, the teachings, the time that they've taken, because oftentimes, you know, as mentors, like, we expect something in return, and true mentors and coaches, you know, don't do that, right? Like, especially in a W-2 or corporate world or friends and family. I mean, I know that I can call you, Luke. I would want you to know that I love you. You know, I love you like a brother. My friends, I love them like brothers. And to those five guys that are going to sit in the front row at my funeral, like, put me to bed, you know, put me to bed.
I had to write my list when you brought that up just a few minutes ago. It didn't take long. You know, it took about 15 seconds to write that top five. That's one of the most powerful things that we've shared together. And I truly appreciate the authenticity and the honesty of not only this story, man, but so many nights we've had these great conversations. You know, if you're a dad out there, if you're a man out there, and none of your friends are still around from grade school or even college, it's never too late to meet somebody that can have a positive impact on your life for the rest of your life. You know, we met late in our 40s, and we definitely have connected in many ways. And I appreciate you and I honor you. And I can't wait to see you out here September 11th. We got to put you on the payroll now that you brought it up to our public attention here.
Absolutely. You know, I'll be there.
Yeah, I appreciate it. To everybody listening, we appreciate you, as Michael stated many times, just having gratitude for you being here. There's so many shows, there's so many channels, there's so many podcasts out there. And you could be anywhere you wanted to, but you chose to be here with us, the dedicated listener who wants to improve not only as a man, but also as a father. The most important job we'll have for the rest of our lives is that of fatherhood. The Fathers of the Future movement is headed to California over the next 3 weeks. We'll be filming podcasts in a couple cities across the Southland and up into Lake Tahoe and even Sacramento. If you're interested in learning more about the show or you'd like to be a guest, feel free to reach out to me. My email, luke@lukekayem.com. And if you got some value out of this podcast, if you laughed, if you cried, if it brought something to you that you didn't have prior to, all we ask in return is that you simply share it, put it on your social media, email it out, send a text. And if you really loved it, go to Apple iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. Michael Sanaki, my brother, thank you for being here on today's Fathers of the Future podcast.
Thanks, brother.
See you guys soon. Have a beautiful day. Peace.